Why would she come?
Good morning. We're going to go ahead and call the Personnel Committee to order.
We can get Cindy in her chair.
Cindy and Rod, if they'll sit down.
Sit down.
I'm surprised the other committee members aren't here, because we said we were giving everybody $500 a meeting.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but nobody else showed up, so we're going to be able to share their part too. So you'll probably end up with $700. Anyway, I'd like to call the meeting to order, and could you do a roll call, please?
On the roll for the Personnel Committee meeting of October 16th, 2019, Director Barrett, Director Chavez, Director Groom, Director Haggerty, Director Hudson, Director Ju, Director Miley, Director Rice, Director Sinks,
here.
Committee Vice Chair Wagon Connect,
here.
Committee Chair Sparing.
I'm present, thank
we
you.
We have one short of a quorum.
Okay. I'd like to ask everyone to please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we have public comments on non-agendized items. Do we have any speaker cards?
I have one from McKenna World.
Okay, McKenna, would you come forward, please?
I appreciate the extra time.
Yes.
I have a disability with light sensitivity, and I also have an orthostatic disability. I'm going to do my best to read it. I appreciate that extra time. And
oh, yeah,
patience.
Take your time.
At the Personnel Committee meeting on March 24th, 2017, there was a public comment regarding the inadequacies at their district with policies addressing disability discrimination of employees. Specific concerns were raised, including the Air District's lack of compliance with the two main laws regarding disability discrimination, the American with Disabilities Act and the California Fair Employment and Housing Act. As mentioned, there was also mentioned was the Air District's policy requiring complaints of discrimination go through the same division that may be responsible or complicit in the discrimination and the harassment. What was not mentioned were the past changes to the MOU between the Air District and the EA and the changes to the administrative code. In the MOU, the union is prohibited from grieving employment actions that are discriminatory. The ability to speak with the personnel committee regarding discrimination complaints as part of the complaint procedure has been removed. The most vulnerable employees to discrimination are disabled employees. I am a disabled employee of the Air District, and my employment has been affected by a hostile work environment. The treatment I have received is not secret. The discrimination I have received has been out in the open. Unlike other forms of discrimination, disability discrimination can be acceptable if it's treated as such. I have some photos of my workstation in this building that I would like to show you an example of what my accommodations have been like. Can somebody? I ask the Personnel Committee to please intervene with an independent audit of the district's policies concerning disabled employees. I ask the committee to have an independent audit of the treatment I've received and request the Air District engage in mediation with the DFEH so a lawsuit can be prevented. I have an ongoing discrimination complaint with the DFEH because the discrimination has been ongoing for years. I ask the committee to intervene in the district's refusal to let me return to work just because I have a permanent disability. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. As you know, it's difficult for us to respond, but what I will do as the chair of the committee is I will meet with our staff and we can just kind of go through these things to make sure, see if anything else needs to come back to the committee. So thank you for your comments. Any other public comments? Okay. We have the, well, we can't approve minutes. We don't have a quorum. So what we'll do is go into the closed session, and this is a agency. Do you read the closed session for the purpose? Okay, it's a conference with labor negotiators and the agency. This is also the discussion on the evaluation of both the executive officer and the district council. So with that, we'll go into a closed session. Thank you. There, we have no announcement from the closed session. And Brian, did you have anything to add to that? Or
nope, that sounds exactly right.
Okay, very good. The we're moving on to item number six. This is the who's presenting this? Jack?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. This item is a discussion with all of you regarding our resource needs, our human resource needs at the Air District. And to set the stage for this conversation, I wanted to just remind all of you that when we adopted our budget last June, we did not have a staffing in an increase to the actual number of staff that we were at that time. We wanted to further assess a number of programs and ask ourselves whether we need to augment the staff or facilitate a movement of the staff to meet our program needs. And it's under that context that I'm bringing to you today a discussion about augmenting the staff resources to fulfill our needs. I'm looking for Marcy to set up my presentation. And Mr. Chairman, I'll just go ahead and walk you through this conversation. And just in terms of going through the board, I'm gonna come here to the Personnel Committee first, give you a little bit of a conversation about what this is all about. I'm also planning then to go to the Executive Committee meeting on November 6th also with this presentation changed based on your input. But first and foremost, I'll just keep going. As we get our, we want to talk about the clerk of the board right now. No, I'm kidding. No, so I'll just walk you through. If you, I don't know if you have hard copies in front of you or not. Do you have hard copies?
Yes.
Okay, if you have hard copies, then if you can look down. So in assessing our programs, I asked our deputies to take a look at the current staffing of these programs. And a very important theme comes to mind I want to make sure you're all aware of is the fact that AB 617, this is the program in which we of course, identify those communities that are stressed with regard to air pollution. And as you know, that effort has have the staff identified a number of impacted communities up and around the Bay Area. And just last, or I should say 2 weeks ago, we adopted the first plan, the West Oakland Community Action Plan, in support of implementing AB 617. A lot of work underway right now to be able to undertake and develop a monitoring plan out in Richmond. But really to get ahead of the requirements of this bill, we've been out there undertaking a number of efforts, not the least of which include our ACLIMA study and others to be able to get ahead of and build not only the community support network that's needed to implement 617, but also get ahead of the work in terms of conducting air monitoring on the ground and getting a better sense of both the stationary sources that are in these impacted communities. And we've identified, I think, I'm gonna look at Greg, how many communities have we got identified potentially on our list? Is there 10?
Can't remember. Yeah, up to 10, Jack, over about the next 5 communities years.
Over the next 5 years. So this program itself has already required us to move staff from enforcement, move staff from engineering to be able to work on being able to understand and characterize the stationary sources in these communities, identify strategies with the community in West Oakland, and certainly all this work is going on in terms of developing the monitoring plan for Richmond and elsewhere. And so with the thought of fully staffing the AB 617 implementation program and restoring what we call our core programs, namely our enforcement, our engineering and our measurement and monitoring staff, we are recommending that we augment the budget with an additional 10 staff. And this would be a mid-year budget augmentation. So let me give you a little bit more information. I'm also going to be recommending the establishment of another senior deputy to head up some of this work. So with this slide here, slide three, gives you a little bit of background, or I should breakdown, excuse me, of where we think we need additional staff. And this includes two more in our planning group. And that's the group on the ground that's actually been developing a lot of the 617 plan itself. Two in community engagement. This is the staff that actually interacts with the communities itself and establishing that relationship moving forward. Additional staff on rulemaking, two in engineering, two in enforcement. So this is to basically shore up these two divisions in their efforts. As I indicated earlier, we've had to move staff around just to get some of the work done on 617. I'm also contemplating creating another senior executive that would head up this work, what I'll call our deputy equity officer. And there'll be more to come on that. But what you see here is a total of 10. And just to make sure you all fully understand the full big picture, when I had the staff go back, the number was actually 21. And I felt at that time...
I'm sorry, 21 what? I didn't...
Well, 21 additional staff. But
oh, I see.
I've had...
That may be a strategy, Rod. You know.
Well,
if he was asking for 21, thinking,
you have 10 on the slide. I was thinking 5. Yeah, you know.
Staff would have asked for 50 if he was asking for 21.
No, I'll explain a little bit what I mean by that. Is that at first we asked ourselves what do we need and to get the work done, and we came back with a number like 21, but. Honestly, there's several things going through my mind, through the senior executive team's mind. To get staff on board takes us several months anyway. That's one issue. And two, honestly, a lot of us lived through the 2008 recession. And so given the fact that that, of course, is looming out there and could occur again, I'd like us to move ahead cautiously when we're trying to fulfill back our staffing resources. And so this gives you a sense of what we think makes sense in terms of as we move forward. Also, we're in negotiations with the state on 617 resources, very specifically in talking with the California Resources Board on just what is our fair share of the monies that's allocated out to implement 617. There's $50 million available. We've been successful in getting 10 of that. However, in the larger context of the state, you have other parts of the state of California all listing additional communities. We've taken a slightly different approach, but I'd like to see us hopefully move forward in those negotiations and continue to receive what we think is our fair share, which is $10 million.
What portion of this you think will be reimbursed of the cost of these 10?
I'm going to look to Jeff McKay, but let me think here. The engineering and enforcement and the we're both going to be reimbursed, those four, because we would use permit fees to pay for those staff. Probably also the rules person would be paid for, so that's five of the. So the planning and the community engagement, I got to believe, would largely be a result of our property tax money. But I'm going to look to Jeff as to how that would get
allocated. Largely. Though we are able to charge some of that work. The board's current policies for cost recovery will support this.
When you bring this back, can you give us a third column with comments as to the potential funding sources or where mm-hmm. you think the resources come from? So we're going to clearly know what the impact is on our kind of our general fund.
Right.
Or at least understand what the long-range thinking is. Because I think we all know there's a recession in our future, and mm-hmm. so can we sustain these 10 positions is really going to be the question.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The thought being that as we move forward, both through this committee and the executive committee, if the board is and I'll certainly add that on there as well, some additional information relative to how this gets paid for. But we're thinking that this would be built into next year's budget fully, is how ultimately it would be funded.
Yeah, Brad.
If how many people worked on these projects in Richmond and in West Oakland this last year?
Greg, do you want to? It's
at least 60.
60, yeah. And so we're adding 10 to the 60.
Yeah, I would you know, in terms of individuals, at least 60. I wouldn't count. That's probably not the FTE count because those folks are working on other things.
Yeah,
but we would be augmenting those staff that are already working on that.
One of the concerns that I'm going to express to you is that it's having an impact on other parts of the agency.
Oh, yeah.
So 617, while it's an important work, we're glad to be there delivering these health benefits to the community. It's coming at the cost of our permit backlog. It's coming at the cost of our enforcing our work, our permit conditions on stationary sources. And so the thought that's going behind this preliminary staffing augmentation is to really build back and make sure our core programs are fully functioning with its sufficient staff resources. And that's not to say that the 617 is not important, because we think it is. It's going to be our future as we deliver the promised work in these local communities, but it's clearly having an impact on us, as you can start to see.
Cindy?
Thank you. So I think this is really exciting. And I was wondering if you could help me understand just two things. One is that it feels to me like the biggest challenge we're going to have with 617, besides just a really whole new class of body of work that we're going to need to get done, is the coordination of 617 with all the other organizations and agencies that we're going to rely on for the plan. And so what I'm wondering is the senior person that you're looking at adding going to be that coordinator and that gatherer of all the other organizations? And then I'll ask a second question.
It's a great question. And what I'm hoping what I can do is attract somebody that will serve in a very senior leadership role to really bring and reorganize all the racial equity work underneath this person. And as I went out and started to take a look at how do other organizations out there that do a lot of work in local communities, I know that's a four-letter word right now, but PG&E has a lot of people that do this kind of work, and... Sorry,
well, they don't do it. Let me say what I think you want to do that's slightly different than what PG&E does, I hope. Let me just stop you.
I was had others in mind, but no, go ahead.
I think that, so let me just make a one observation about the first part of your response, and that is that it feels to me like this may be an area where we would want to get a little bit of funding or a whole lot of buy-in from our sister organizations on the lead person, either helping us to pay for that lead person because they're going to be able to coordinate work among all of our agencies, or some sort of method for that being a joint hiring so that everybody has buy-in to that person marshaling resources from other agencies. Because what we're looking for is somebody who's got good policy chops and actually is an organizer. And what I was going to say, the difference between PG&E and everybody else that does government affairs is that they get input and sometimes respond to it and sometimes don't. And we are really trying to get somebody, again, who's got the skill set of an organizing background with a skill set of real community work and then agency work. Because we're looking for translators who can actually move people to act, irrespective of where they are on the spectrum. And that is significantly different than almost everybody else that we work with in the public sector. And so I say that because I think both the person at the top has to have that skill set of marshaling resources, and that some subset of the folks here, like you have on community engagement, that to me is actually /organizer. Like that's a real... That's a different skill set than normal engagement. Because normal engagement is you get information, you report back, you go back to the community. That's really not what you're looking for. So the leader and these two other people are going to actually need real organizing background.
No, it's a great point. So, for example, I know you probably don't remember this, but when we were at West Oakland a few weeks ago, you actually heard testimony from a variety of people who would fit the bill. Mm-hmm. And they are community sustainability coordinators from the city of Oakland, for example. Mm-hmm. That was where I was going to go next after PG&E. But you,
sorry about that.
No, it's okay. It's a bad example. But no, the city of Oakland has this. Port of Oakland does this.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really good people out there that we interact with in our work so far in working on 617 that I think we would like to figure out how we can attract to have them come work here.
Right, and maybe the other thing to take a look at is what's the job description that they used for those positions that really attracted that particular kind of person? And one thing I would say is that in this region, you have so many social equity groups that where you have really relatively energetic. I don't mean just young in age. I mean like, woohoo, we still love people that work for a bunch of the nonprofits that we work with that I think would also be fun to engage both in terms of the job description, but also in terms of who they would recommend that we hire. Because I also imagine the other thing, I don't know if you'll need this, but language capacity among the team may be another core value that we want to take a look at, and certainly cultural competencies. So anyway, I'm really interested in that top person, even if that means we've got to find someone that is, if the pay scale or the skill set scale need to be slightly higher, because the reality is if the person has to have enough gravitas to be sitting at your table with you all, because otherwise they're not going to be able to get the work done that you're asking them to get done. Just not going to happen. So thank you.
Okay. Jack, anything else to add?
For now, it's really just starting the conversation with the board. At the executive committee, I would plan to provide a lot more detail on this item, only because we are continuing to flesh this out. And I appreciate the input back on that executive office position as well. I'll probably follow up with a number of you on a little bit more of the detail on that position.
Okay. So is there a consensus that we're supportive of this staffing augmentation? Okay. So we have a consensus that go forward, since we don't have a quorum. Is there anything else on this item, Jack? And then when you bring it back, Jeff, you'll give us a little more detail on the funding sources.
Yep,
that's correct.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to item number 7, these are public comments. This is a second chance to speak, is that correct? Do we have any cards? Okay. Committee members, comments, other business?
I just have a request. I was interested in getting
a lot of coffee this morning.
You know, actually, I was on a plane all day yesterday. That's what
did
it.
You're making up for it.
Could you talk just a little bit about the response you have to the explosion/fire and help us just understand what's going on?
Certainly. And last night I sent out to all the board an incident report that was prepared by Mr. Kino and his staff. But this was a situation that started at, I think, 1:50 in the afternoon yesterday over in the Crockett area. But I'm going to let Wayne kind of explain what we did. I've had a lot of communication with the board, by the way, through text and email about explicitly our role. And just to make sure at the outset, I'm going to just reiterate again, our role is to support the first responders. That's what our role is. And we're not a first responding agency. There's been a little bit of a miscommunication about that by some of the board members thinking that we should have been in there. But our role really is to be in charge of what we believe are the air quality impacts and steps we're going to take to understand that and support the first responders, in this case, Contra Costa County. Mm-hmm. So,
okay. Yeah. So thank you for the question. We do support the first responders. That is our primary responsibility. And what does that entail? That entails going to the command center. You know, we have a lot of air quality information. We have a lot of information on facilities, what they store, where they store them. So we can provide that to the first responders and whoever else needs that, along with the facility. Sometimes the facility, you know, they're so busy, they're not really there initially. So we do provide a lot of information to the first responders. That's primarily our role. So yesterday, to put it in the perspective of the personnel committee, and the resource discussion we just had, we had a number of people, staff responding. So just directly for on the response, there were five inspection staff working from 2 o'clock all the way past midnight. Working on this particular incident. Sang Thao, Roger Farn, Jackie Nguyen, Simon Weiner, and Ed Giacometti, those are just the inspection staff that were there. Along with that, the meteorologists have been providing us weather forecasts to determine where the smoke is going, so we try and relay that also to the first responders. Engineering department, they provide a lot of information on the facility itself, and we utilize that information to tell the first responders. Our communications department, they do a really fantastic job. Christine Rosales and their communication group, they did over 17 interviews yesterday and much more today just on the fire itself and trying to relay information about air quality, how to be safe, follow the health department's recommendations, and that sort of thing. Just a little bit about the incident. It started at around 2 o'clock. We were notified by the highway patrol that there was a fire. And we responded immediately. I think the incident, there were initial explosion, initial fire and explosion. They closed Highway 80 until about 10 o'clock last night. And I think the Contra Costa Health Department they lifted shelter in places in various locations, but I don't think the final shelter in place was lifted until sometime after 10. There's a little town, I think it's called Torme. That's right near that facility. It's really not that near, but it's the nearest one. They evacuated that town, which is about 20 people, immediately. So that's really what we did. We continue to do that because the facility has damaged tanks and damaged piping. It is a bulk terminal, which receives large quantities of material and ships them out to various locations. They don't actually own the material, but they store and ship out for lots of different facilities. So they have a lot of material. It was ethanol in this particular case. They blend that with gasoline. You see that, what is it called? 85 gasoline. That's that 15% ethanol that they blend in. So that's the two tanks that were on fire. So we're still continuing the investigation. The facility is still recovering, trying to recover. A lot of damaged piping, a lot of other damage to tanks. Luckily, they didn't catch on fire and explode. So, still working.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments?
Yep.
Okay. If there's no other business, meeting adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.